So, okay, so let's now take a look at the story of the Keshet, which is a piece of this puzzle. Vayivarech Elokim, if you take a look at source 1, Vayivarech Elokim et Noach lepanav, Vayomer lahem, Pru revu meluet haaretz, Beatem pru revu, Shirtzu vaaretz revuva. Hashem is making, on one hand, a simple demand, but on the other hand, a very complex and, in some cases, very, very high demand. He's telling that Noach and his sons to be fruitful and multiply. Obviously, we know the end of the story. The sons were. Noach certainly never was. But I say it's on the one hand, it's very simple, because there could be nothing more explicit. On the other hand, asking somebody who's just seen the world destroyed to reinvest, asking the first, you know, we throw around the term survivor in our society loosely, but the bottom line is that the original survivor was Noah. Noah literally survived a world that was utterly and completely destroyed. And so asking any survivor, and anybody who knows survivors knows this, to reinvest in the world is an act of heroism in its own right. So Hashem telling Noah, Pururubu, is a very demanding thing. Okay. Noah, of course, knows, maybe I'll be righteous, maybe even my children will be righteous, but my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, why would I want to reinvest in the world? So Rashi in Source 2 points out, about what we're going to read in the next few psukim of the Keshet, Va'ani hinani, says Rashi, Maskim ani imcha, Noach, I agree with you, Shehaya Noach doeg lasok bepiriva yirivya. Noach didn't want to have children. Achiv ticho kadosh baruch hu, because he was afraid to reinvest in the world. The world is going to be destroyed. Why don't I want to have kids?
What about having relations?
But you didn't want to have children. You didn't want to have children.
Didn't have birth control.
Well, then I guess he would have
have methods of birth.
Right. So
crude methods of birth.
Okay. Right. All so right. Right. Or like you know, Erbona. Why? Because he doesn't want Hashem to destroy the world. And that is exactly what Hashem did. Hashem said, you know what? I agree with you. It's not fair for me to ask. It's an amazing medrash that Rashi is quoting. It's not fair for me to ask you to be fruitful and to multiply, to reinvest in the world. It's not fair for me to ask that unless I give you a promise. I will give you a sign. So what Rashi is explaining is that the whole nature of the Keshet, the entire purpose of the Keshet was to tell Noah, yes, you can move forward. Because it wasn't fair, it's an amazing idea, it simply wasn't fair to ask Noah to reinvest in the world. Psychologically speaking, it was a psychological concession. It was a concession to Noah's psychology, the psychology of trauma that Hashem made. And if you just look at the psukim, we don't have to read them inside, but the term bris is used 7 times. 7 times in a span of a short amount of psukim to reinforce this notion that Hashem keeps on telling him, et briti, et briti, et briti. In other words, let me put it in modern parlance. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Briti. Briti, ze'o sabris, ze'o sabris, ze'o sabris. This is a sign, this is a sign, this is a sign. Okay. That's a very important perspective because it gives you a sense of what Noach's, where he was. And you can understand the trauma, and that's why we have the Keshet. What's very important to point out at the beginning, if you take a look at the next few sources, is that why is the Keshet a particularly appropriate type of os bris in this context. Just how was the world, Keshet is the rainbow, so how was the world destroyed?
Water.
Exactly, so now this is speaking, if you're dealing with somebody who's been traumatized, you can't just give a random type of symbol. You have to give a sign which speaks to exactly where they are, which is to say that when it would rain, and Noah's, can you imagine, he's more concerned about water than anything else, so that when it would rain, Hashem would put up a sign for Noah. And in all subsequent generations, the Doros Olam, as the Brit says, that water will not be used to destroy the world again, and by extension, the world will never be destroyed again. So you have this very, very important perspective here, even beyond the story of Noah, which is that when somebody has a particular sensitivity, we should try to speak directly to that issue. That's why, you know, Hashem could have chosen any sign. He could have given, you know, a peace sign, you know, or one of those, you know, other peace signs. But Hashem chose a sign that specifically had to do with rain. It's
interesting. Yes. And I don't the actual source for this, but pretty good because all there were 10 things that were made before creation.
100%.
All of them really pertain either directly or indirectly to Bnei Israel, with the exception of the Keshet.
Okay, excellent.
And it's very few too. Does that mean Hashem recognized that there's going to be a destruction and that he would make this brit, or is it something that maybe had been intended maybe for another use and it happened to be relevant in the setting?
Okay, excellent. So Steve's touching on two points. Is the Keshet merely a universal symbol, or is there a particular aspect to it, number one? And number two, was this, you know, in some sense anticipatory? So we're going to actually, thank God, address both of those questions. Take a look at source 3. Rabbeinu Bechaya deals with the second issue. Rabbeinu Bechaya was a Talmud of the Ramban. He says, Vida ki ha'os hazeh einenu nira b'chol yom unan o b'chol yom sheyordim gishamim. It's not meant simply for any cloudy day or any day on which there's rain. Af bizman she'adorim b'chuyav. But it's only supposed to appear when the generation actually is deserving of destruction, to point out that Hashem will always keep His promise. In other words, right, exactly. And thus the Mishnah Brura brings down a psak in the name of the Chayi Adam, Haroah HaKeshes, in source 4, if a person actually sees a rainbow, one should actually not tell their friend that they see a rainbow, mitam motzi diba, because that's like motzi diba on the world, what you're really saying is that the world should have been destroyed. So again, that's just a very dramatic expression of this notion that the rainbow is reserved for specifically those times when Hashem says, I would have, but I won't. That's the notion of the rainbow that Rabbeinu Bechaya points out. But
is there a dichotomy in the rainbow?
We're going to see that there are many, many other dimensions as well. So the first dimension that we've seen is speaking to Noah's psychology at that time and saying there will never be another destruction. Why is a rainbow? Because again, it's a rainbow. It's a book that comes from the rain to speak to the area where Noah was most concerned. But then again, it's perpetuated in every generation to make a sign that even though if I was following the strict Midas Hadin, says Hashem, it would all be over. Es britina tati benan, right? Velo osif la kalel odas adama. You know, I will not continue to destroy man. There won't be an utter destruction. Now, again, there can be destructions of particular cities. I mean, that we saw. I mean, forget you don't even have to go to Nabi and Yericho, but Sodom and Amorah. Rather, it could be destruction of particular nations. I don't see too many Romans walk around or ancient Egyptians walking around. But in terms of the entire world, there can never be an entire destruction. But I want to try and the psukim seem to be the specific. The obvious correct that the world could not be destroyed through rain, but the way that Chazal interpret these psukim, based on other psukim, that it's not just a stretch, but that the world will actually never be destroyed by any means, not by rain nor by anything else. It's true that these psukim, if you read them carefully, sound exactly the way that Avi points out, but remember that there are other psukim which says, Od kol yimei ha'aretz, you read them yesterday, Zera v'katsir v'kor v'chem v'kayetz v'choref lo yishbotu. And we learn from there that actually Hashem never plans to fully destroy the world again, whether by water or any other means. The rainbow then becomes a perpetual symbol, which started off as a specific symbol with the context of the Mabul, but it has broader implications. If you take a look here at the next section, I want to try and develop two other perspectives which are less well known about the rainbow. We'll take a look at them outside, just in the interest of time. The perspective of the Ramban, followed by the perspective of the Chizkuni. The Ramban says, the image of the rainbow is not just that, okay, when there's water, Hashem wants to reassure us, the waters will not be waters of destruction, but actually this was an ancient military peace gesture. We think about the white flag, but that when you want to show your enemy that your intention was not to continue hostilities, what you would do is you would take your bow and arrow and turn it around so that it was facing you. Now, what is a rainbow? You imagine the rainbow, right? It looks like this. So it's Hashem, according to the Ramban, flipping over the bow and arrow and saying, I won't shoot. Which way would the arrows go? They would go up, not down. That's the Ramban's perspective, is that this is a gesture of peace. I mean, that we know, but it's a specific gesture of peace that would have been extremely meaningful to people of this time.
Okay. Is it supposed to speak to an individual person, or is it supposed to speak to an individual person on a national level?
Both. It's supposed to speak to both. An individual should realize that, look, the generation
you know, part of the generation.
Exactly, exactly. But
it's not just you, it's the whole generation.
Right, exactly. So, and then the perspective, just one second, Igor, the perspective of the Chizkuni is slightly different. He actually makes what seems like a mystical argument, well, I'll try to put it into rational terms, but that the Keshet, this is based on a Pasuk in Yechezkel, is actually the very image of God. And that it wouldn't make sense for Hashem to put his image amongst us if he was planning on destroying the world. In fact, it suggests the opposite. If I'm willing to put my image amongst you, then what does that indicate? I must not have abandoned the world. So that's the perspective of the Chizkuni. Now, I think this is particularly interesting in light of the fact that, again, this is, I'm sure, a very deep concept that goes well beyond my understanding. Let me just give you one sentence about it. If it's correct to say that Hashem's image is the image of the rainbow, and again, that's based on the Pasuk in the first paragraph of Yechezkel, perhaps the idea is as follows, that what is the single most important feature of the rainbow is its comprehensiveness. It literally covers the entire spectrum. That's what it is. It's a visible spectrum of colors. And the real notion then would seem to my mind to be that the way that we conceive of Hashem, obviously Hashem has no total image, but the way that we can appreciate Hashem, what does it mean that it's the image of Hashem, is that it's literally completely comprehensive. Hashem is involved in all aspects, encompasses the universe in all of its dimensions. We as people occupy our space, we get to know some people in our area, we know our family, we work in particular areas, but I'll be first person to tell you, I'm contributing very, very little right now to the world of interventional radiology, right? Hashem is involved in all aspects of the world. It's literally, and that's the metaphor of every color of the rainbow. Yes, Steve?
I was going to say, it's very interesting because according to the Ramban, it would be very appropriate because a keshet is still a weapon. And if, in fact, you're mechuyav, it's still an indication.
That is very much, that's absolutely, Rabbeinu Bachai is a Talmud of the Ramban, that's really where he got the idea from, that Hashem takes the weapon, he says, I would have used it, flip it around and say, I won't. So that it tells you two things at once. That's the dialectic that Donnie was referring to. On the one hand, it indicates, I'd be ready with my bow and arrow, but on the other hand, es kashtina tachi banane, it's permanently flipped over. This is a permanent gesture piece. So much is it the image of Hashem following the direction of the Chizkuni, which really comes from the Gemara, that the Gemara Brachos, which I reproduced here for you in Surah 7, indicates that when a person sees a rainbow, that it should actually fall on their face because they're looking at the image of God. Not only that, but you have in one of the appendices here on the back, which I won't be able to get to, that for that reason, the Gemara Chagiga paskins that it's inappropriate to look at a rainbow for too long because it's like staring at Hashem. And remember, we talk about, that's the same Gemara, which, by the way, suggests, even though this is a very broad topic, that one shouldn't look at the Kohanim when they bless the people, which is a very broad topic. It's the
same thing as the rainbow?
It's the same thing as a rainbow, because both of them, the Shekhinah is present. So just be aware that there's no issur of looking at a rainbow, as the Beis Yosef explains. You have this in the appendices if you're interested in pursuing it. The idea is basically that one shouldn't stare at it too much out of respect for the Demos Hashem. So we really take this idea seriously.
Say bracha also to you.
Ah, okay, we're going to get to the bracha part of it. So the Gemara in Brachos said that if you see the rainbow, you should fall on your face. And the reason the Gemara in Brachos gives is because this is the image of Hashem. I would just twist the Gemara a drop and say another reason that you could suggest for falling on your face when you see the rainbow is what emotion Aaron always do when Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the Jewish people. So there's another dimension to that as well. I want to show you exactly right, that it's a way of saying, oh my goodness, I didn't realize things were kidekach, they were at that point. The Be'er Halacha has a fascinating safek, he has an uncertainty that I want you to explain to me. He says as follows, Avi so correctly pointed out that there's a bracha that we recite when we see the rainbow. But the Be'er Halacha is the following safek. Let's say you see a rainbow, but you don't see a rainbow that's the full rainbow in the shape of the upside down bow. You see a rainbow, but you know there are many different shapes of the rainbow. Should you only say, this is his question, and doesn't answer it. Should you only say a bracha, that is only really considered seeing a rainbow, if you see the full rainbow, the upside down bow, or is it acceptable if you only see a part of the rainbow? What do you think about that subject? In this sense, what's the Be'er Halacha really asking, based on what we know so far?
We want to know what constitutes rainbow.
Okay, good. So what does that mean?
What is the fact of the spectrum of colors being seen through a rain cloud, is that what constitutes a rainbow, or is it the shape? Is the shape a part of it without which it is not the same?
And correct.
The keshet part Is it the shape? Or is
well,
the
I also...
Exactly. So in other words, but just put in the language that we've seen already, I would put it to you this way.
Right.
Is it the Ramban, or is it the Kiskuni?
Yes.
In other words, according to the Ramban, the whole point is that it's a flipped upside down bow.
Right.
Right? So that only makes sense to say the Bracha if you see Hashem's peace gesture. Right. You see the bow and it's flipped upside down. But according to the Kiskuni, it's the spectrum of colors which makes the difference. Yes, Donnie.
I'd like to point out... after learning brachos, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to categorize the rainbow the way you did, which I agree with, I think you can parallel also some of the other things that we say brachos on. Meaning, like, for example, a bracha on a beautiful girl, right?
A bracha on all kinds of natural occurring things, right?
But one of the
beautiful
things,
beautiful people.
But let's take a beautiful girl for example, right? Because you're also some parents that's supposed to look at girls, right?
Yeah.
So you have the same kind of duality that you have with saying, let's say a bracha on a beautiful girl. Oh, you're not supposed to look at her, but she's beautiful. You're not supposed to look at the rainbow,
right?
But yet it's beautiful,
right? Right. So there is absolutely that dynamic, and that's why I like to quote the Chaye Adam that we saw before. The Chaye Adam says, you know, you're tempted to, you want to tell your friend, oh my God, it's a beautiful rainbow, but if you just take a step back and you think about it, you say, oh my God, what are you telling your friend? You know, unless, of course, your kavana is to get him to do tshuva, because the whole world is, right.
Rainbow.
Yeah. Right. Imagine, that's like,
But just don't look.
Exactly. Okay. So let's now take a look at the issue of the bracha. Okay. So remember
we're going at the beer. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. So we just did the beer halacha. So the beer halacha again raises that suffix, and it really comes down to the issue of the Ramban and the Chizkuni, as we were saying. So according to the Ramban, you would need actually the shape of the bow, because for him it's the bow and arrow which is flipped upside down, which is a gesture of peace. But Chizkuni, it's really this spectrum of colors that the issue. Okay, so Avi correctly pointed out that there is a bracha, even though we don't ask that you should fall on your face. The Gemara says you should fall on your face, but that looks too much like a avodah zarah, but you have to make a bracha. Now, take a look at source 10, which is on the top of page 3. What is the proper expression of bracha? Aval beruche v'adai mevarech, says the Gemara. My mevarech, what's the bracha? So the first approach is baruch zocher habris. Blessed is he who remembers his covenant. Which makes a lot of sense, right? Because the whole idea is that Hashem, through the rainbow, is remembering his covenant at the time of Noah, that he will never destroy the world again. B'masni satana, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, we have a different girsa, not just zocher habris, but a little bit more extensive, ne'eman b'briso, v'kayam b'ma'amaro, right? He is faithful to his covenant. He doesn't even remember it, but he's faithful to it. V'kayam, and he fulfills mimaro what he said, and it's his words to Noach. Amar of Papa, because we have two viable expressions. Ilkach nimrinu l'tarvayhu. Therefore, let us say both. Baruch zocher habris, v'ne'eman b'briso, v'kayam b'ma'amaro. And that is how the Rambam paskins. If you take a look at source 11, this became the basis of the Pesach and the Mechad and the Shulchan Aruch. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Zocher Habris, Ne'eman Bebriso, V'kayam B'ma'amaro, straight out of the Gemara, and that is in fact the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch in Source 12. Again, Haroa Akeshes Omer, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Zocher Habris, Ne'eman Bebriso, V'kayam B'ma'amaro, and here the Shulchan Aruch tacks on what we've already alluded to based on the Gemara in Chagiga, V'asar Lihistak Elbo V'yozer. You don't want to look too much at it, because again, even though it's beautiful and you want to say the bracha, and again, it should make our hearts warm that this is a sign of peace, you don't want to look too much at it out of deference to the Timus Hashem Shabbos. Yes, very good, Igor.
Vis-a-vis what we discussed last year.
Sure.
Maybe one of the concepts is this was a universal symbol to mankind.
Sure.
But look at the Dora Plugga. They were trying to build this Migdal up into Shemayim, maybe as if they could actually grab the Keshet.
Yeah.
It was a weapon.
Right, flip it around.
But
and
you wonder why they would. Right. Why was a concept they would even engage in battle with Hashem?
Right.
Maybe this whole concept that the Keshet does have this dual aspect.
Right, the perception.
And it's also in connection with the universal aspect. And right after the Dora Plugga, there's no longer universal mankind there.
That's a very well said. Very well said. Okay, so the Balei HaTosos make the following point. Say as follows. If you take a look at the Girsa, Hilkach Nemrinu L'Tarvayhu. Therefore, we shall say both. In other words, Baruch Zocher Abris, and then on the other hand, V'nem Abriso V'kayam B'ma'amaro. So the Balei HaTosos say, Omer Ri, De'ein Chosmin V'Baruch V'Bracha Zo, V'Heichi M'Varech, what's the proper Girsa? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Ne'eman v'briso, he's faithful to his covenant, v'kayam b'shvuaso, v'zochar habris. So which word did the Balei HaTosos insert, which is so striking?
Shvua.
What are they? Which word did they replace with what? So they took shvua and they replaced what? Okay, so Seth, what do you make of that?
Well, because a word can be used to mean a promise, but Shavua is much more specifically saying this is not just something I'm saying, it's something I am swearing.
Excellent. In other words, I think that this is exactly the issue. There's a lot, I would call a lot more oomph saying it to Shavua. It's an amazing thing is that when we see a kasher, we take a minute to reflect on the fact. I would put it this way, if I can even use such a term, Hashem's fidelity and integrity. The capacity to take a Shavua centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries ago, and to stick to that as a shvua. It's not just he's Kayim Ma'amaro, he said something and he's loyal to something that he said, but he took it b'torah shvua. And what's fascinating, is that you have this in their second appendix here on the back, is that the Gemara in Shvuos actually learns out halachas of shvua from the formulation that Hashem used in the time of Noah. In other words, the Gemara on some level took it seriously as a shvua. And that's what the Balei HaTosos are trying to highlight, is that Hashem looked at the situation and says, no, now it's time for a Shavua. Let's go back to where we started. Noah needed reassurance. So now I'm making a covenant and I'm giving you a sign of the covenant, but on an oath, my word. That's the level on which he's trying to reassure us. I want man to invest in this world, in Peru Revu, but not just physically multiplying, but with everything that entails. Investing, cultivating, developing the world as much as a person can, and I promise, I take an oath, says Hashem, that I'm going to keep my end of the deal. Now, that's a very powerful formulation. Now, this isn't the way we paskin, but if it were up to me, I would have said we should have the language of Shavua in there. Because if we're meant to reassure ourselves, continue to invest in the world, even if the door is l'chuyev, Hashem won't destroy it, because Hashem wants this world to succeed, and he's always going to keep that Shavua. That's a very, very powerful formulation. Sometimes one word can make all the difference. V'kayam b'shvuaso, to my mind, is a more powerful and more evocative formulation than even v'kayam b'ma'amaro. Yeah,
I have an objection.
Sure. Okay, so Igor will object and then Avi.
The Mahulka, because Hashem swears that I will bring the water. He didn't say I will bring the water, but Ma'amaro was a shvua.
Well, that's the argument that the Gemara in Shavuos is making, is that it's actually...
Right.
It's actually a Shavuos. Now, to be honest, the Balei HaTosos in Shavuos itself are a little more tentative about it. They say, well, we're not really sure that you can derive halachos of Shavuos based on Noach. But here the Balei HaTosos, at least the Ri, is very taken with the notion that it was, in fact, a Shavuos. And I think there's a powerful message there. Yeah, Avi, please go ahead.
My objection is, sure, man, v'kayem b'ma'amaro, but Hashem has to make a shvua. Hashem says v'kayem b'ma'amaro, it's from Hashem. It's not a problem. I wouldn't need a shvua from man. I wouldn't need one from Hashem, you know. From
right,
man.
Right.
But I swear it all the time. Being shvati.
So I think Avi's point is well taken, and Seth's point is also well taken, and I agree with both, which is to say that, of course, if Hashem says something, Lo ben Adam hu lenachem, he's not going to reverse himself. You know, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. Of course, it's truth in the absolute form. But for our purposes, in terms of how do we conceive of this, it's important for at least from our perspective to realize that Hashem took it b'Torah says Shavua. In other words, this is something that Hashem didn't just say. Of course, Hashem's going to keep what he said, but he wants us to understand for ourselves how deeply this is true. And for our purposes, then maybe it's important to have the language of Shavua. Yeah, Donnie.
Can you say brachos? I mean, if you're not a person this is all ancient Hebrew and stuff.
Right.
Can you say brachos in your own language? Say, if you see a rainbow, say, thank you.
Supposed to.
Or you see a beautiful woman, you're beautiful. I mean,
right. So you shouldn't say that in that specific example. That wouldn't be the right thing to do because the Gemara doesn't say to communicate that to the person. Because it gets into more of a theos issue. No, it is a little complicated. A person, if they can't, for whatever reason, can absolutely use the English. There is something special in the context of prayer and in the context of blessings in general to use the language of Chazal. It is Lashon Chazal.
You should use
a standardized translation because the special language is important. The precision is very important. So what needs to happen is what I've advised many times in the past for people who aren't readers of Hebrew is to carry around. Thank God today it's an amazing thing what we have in terms of English. I don't know so much about the other language which exists, though. I know there's been good work done in Spanish and French, but. And Russian as well. There's no question about that.
Spontaneous prayer.
But you should use an English translation. That's very, very important. Absolutely.
Why? Because they had nevuah.
I wouldn't say it's a nevuah, but they're trying to evoke particular themes, and the themes are very important. That's in fact why the Rambam, you'll recall when we studied Hilchos Tefillah, the Rambam said the reason that we need a standardized text is because we don't have the kind of precision of language that Chazal had. Okay, so I just want to point out something based on the Pesukim in Yeshayahu, which I think is very, very significant. We're here dwelling on the Girsa of the Ri, who focuses on the Shvuah dimension, versus, let's say, the Girsa of the Rambam, which becomes the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, so take a look. Take a look at the Pesukim in Yeshayahu, which really speak to this issue. And now, what we're going to do is I want to show you sort of the roots of the Ri's position, but to make a point that Steve brought up at the very beginning, and to show how I perceive of an amazing transition in his Pesukim in Yeshayahu. So Yeshayahu says as follows: Ki me noach zosli, this for me, and I'll explain what this is in just a second. This for me. Is like the waters of Noah. Asher nishbati, I took a shavua, me'avor me'noach od ha'aretz. Of course, now you understand very well where the Ri and the Gemara and Shavuos, for that matter, got their position that this was a shavua. Asher nishbati, me'avor me'noach od ha'aretz. Kein nishbati, so too, I have taken a shavua mikitzof alayich, from becoming angry with you, Israel, Umigo or Bach, and from rebuking you too strongly. This is one of my favorite Pesukim Yeshayahu. Ki haharim yamushu. For it's entirely plausible for mountains to shake. You have earthquakes, you have volcanoes. V'hagva'os timutena. And the high hilltops can wave back and forth. They can shudder. But what can never be shaken or moved? V'chasti me'itech lo yamush. But my kindness to you, O Israel, V'harim yamushu, but v'chasti me'itech lo yamush. I mean, it just doesn't get more poetic than this. Uvrish shlomi lo samut, and my covenant of peace with you, Israel, is unshakable. Amar merachamei Hashem. So, there are two things. First of all, we see the shuah piece very clearly, but it goes much beyond that. Steve, you were talking about the universal aspect of the keshet, and that's certainly true. But what Yeshayahu did is he took a universal symbol of the keshet and he particularized it to Israel. So what did he say? He said, you really understand what the keshet means. You have a tremendous insight into the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. Why? Jewish people didn't exist as a Jew. But the very bris that Hashem made with the world at large, per se, in other words, the bris of not destroying the entire world, he came later and he added one bris in that mode on top of it. Then he came to a specific nation and said, V'chasti me'itech lo yamush. That not only do I promise that I will never entirely destroy the world, I don't give that promise to any particular nation or any particular city. Sodom and Amorah, Yericho, Amalek, right? All of these things. But there is one nation that I make the promise of Noah to, that nation in particular. Ki me'noach zosli asher nishbati. So in fact, you have a particularization, a process of particularization of what was at once a universal symbol, which is an amazing idea that Yeshayahu was trying to articulate.
And it's like the world at large who deserves to be.
100%. That the door could actually be mechuyah b'chach, and nonetheless, that's why, what are the three words that I conclude this? Amar merachamei Hashem. This is a function of the midas harachamim. excellent set. So if you took the keshet and added a completely new demeaning to it, it's what I would call, there's keshet A, which is the keshet of the world. Wow. That guarantees the continuity of the world at large. That's for Kol Yoshvei Teimel that I know of. But then there's keshet B, and keshet B is, that's for us.
Well, it's also so interesting, too, is that you have this, still this motif.